You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Mets reporter Anthony DiComo. And Anthony, big series at Citi Field this week. Mets-Nationals, finally, it seemed like this series has there's been enough buildup just because these teams hadn't faced each other yet. Now we're in mid-May, but obviously a great start for the Mets on Tuesday night. Noah Syndergaard out-dueling Max Scherzer on the hill. Back to that thought, though, about it taking so long for these two teams to play. You think that ended up being a good thing or a bad thing, the way the schedule worked out, that it's mid-May, teams that are going to play each other 18 times are finally meeting up for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, you could look at it both ways. I think it's certainly a good thing in terms of drama because, like you said, there was a bit of a build-up to this series that we wouldn't necessarily have had if it took place on April 15th. Ideally, you know, I think you like to spread it out a little more because teams change over the course of a summer. And if you really want a true representation of which is the better team, of which team's performing better over 162 games from April through late September into October, you know, ideally you would spread it out a little bit more and have these teams play at different intervals. Maybe one team that is doing well in April is not doing so well in June. So it's nice to get that sort of diversity of the calendar in there. But it is what it is. They're going to play each other 19 times, as the Mets will, every NL East division opponent. And it's going to happen one way or the other. So for it to happen now in mid-May, getting on late May, it's an interesting time because I think the Mets are standings-wise, record-wise, right where a lot of people thought they would be. I think the Nationals are probably doing a little bit better than most people thought they would be. But these are the two teams that everyone was looking at in the division, the two teams that everyone knew would probably be there at the end or at least close to the end. And frankly, when we look up again in September, regardless of what happens in these three games this week, you know, I think you're still going to be looking at these two teams fighting it out. I think they'll both be in it until the end. So it's going to be interesting to get that first taste this week. Getting that first taste this week, it's going to be interesting to get that second taste next week down in D.C., but like I said, this is going to be a season-long back and forth, and we'll see who ends up on top.
And Syndergaard ended up on top against Scherzer in the opener. Both pitchers, though, this one pretty much lived up to the hype from a pitching standpoint. Both guys were dominant. Both guys had the 10 strikeouts. Syndergaard lasted a little longer, and the Mets were able to do to Scherzer what teams have done to him this season, and that is capitalize on his mistakes. As good as he's allowed the long ball, and that's what the Mets did, a couple of solo shots, and that's all it took with Syndergaard on the hill. Is there an attitude there or an approach to Scherzer that the Mets had that, I know you're not swinging for home runs, but to know that this guy has made some mistakes this season, we need to make the most of them when they happen?
No, I'd actually disagree with you. I'd say the Mets are swinging.
They are swinging.
Runs.
All right, sure.
And that's not unique to Max Scherzer. That's not because he gives up a lot of them, relatively speaking. It's because that's the way this offense is built. That's how they're going to attack every pitcher. I think it's pretty clear now that their offense is going to live and die by the long ball. And you know, I say that with a grain of salt because people hear that and they act like it's a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. Home runs are great. It's the best type of hit you can get. So a team that's hitting a lot of them is generally going to do very, very well, and the Mets are hitting a ton of homers. Now, of course, there is a downside. It means your offense is going to come in bunches a little bit. It means when you face a guy like Max Scherzer, you're not necessarily built to have the ability to get an infield hit and move the guy along, steal a base, hit and run, get a sacrifice fly and score that way. You're more going to sit back and you're going to wait for those two solo homers. And if you get them and your pitching holds up, you'll probably win. If you don't get them, you'll probably lose. So people take that and they look at it all the time in a negative context. But for me, whether you're facing Max Scherzer or Jose Fernandez or anyone really in the league, you know, if you have the ability to hit home runs, a lot of home runs on a regular basis, you have a pretty good offense. And the Mets have that ability. They have a pretty good offense. You saw it. They only scored two runs off Max Scherzer. That was all they needed. But that ability to take advantage of, not take advantage of Max Scherzer's weakness, but just to exploit their own strengths hit home runs, that's going to serve them well all season long.
It was Daniel Murphy's return, obviously, to Citi Field, and the fans did a nice job. I mean, this is a guy that carried the Mets to the World Series, and clearly the fans did not forget that when he went to D.C. They did the little video tribute before the game. That's fine, but I think you really learn how the fans feel when the guy comes up to the plate for the first time, and a nice standing ovation from Murphy, and a nice moment, I think, even though he went to the rival to show appreciation for what a guy did a year ago.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what's interesting is if Daniel Murphy hadn't had the postseason he had, you'd still be looking at a player that served this franchise really, really well for eight seasons, who was here, through the bad times, who was a consistent good performer through the bad times, and so on and so forth. But if he hadn't done what he did in October, I don't think he would have sniffed the type of ovation, the type of reaction he got last night from the fans. They're just really appreciative of what he was able to do in October. And looking back, I don't think it's lost any of its luster. What he was able to do against the Dodgers, against Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke, and then moving on to the Cubs. I mean, he was the offense for that series. He was the whole thing. And even into the World Series, things ended a little more sourly than Daniel Murphy would have liked, particularly with some of those defensive issues in the later games. But I think with the perspective of time, yeah, fans are able to look back and realize, hey, look, this isn't an all-time great Met, but he was a guy who kind of symbolizes where this franchise was and where it is now and what it's gotten to in a pretty short period of time here. I think fans are appreciative of that. I think they're appreciative of everything Daniel Murphy did for the club during his time here. And see, it wouldn't have been right if he had gotten booed.
Absolutely. So a nice turnaround after a tough weekend against the Rockies for the Mets. But when you look at this roster, the injury's starting to pile up a little bit. That's going to happen over the course of a baseball season. And the Mets have some good news about Steven Matz, that there's no structural damage there. But David Wright scratched with his back woes, again, acting up, I guess. I know it's always a thing with him, but he had a tough day yesterday. Duda also out, Flores on the DL, and that meant Matt Reynolds got promoted. Let's start with Wright, though. I know he just couldn't go, or Terry Collins told him he couldn't go. They don't want to risk anything further. But is this something that when it acts up like this, when the spinal stenosis kind of has a bad day, can it linger? Could he miss more games, or do you think he'll be back this series?
I think this is very much a feeling out period that neither side entirely knows. And, you know, I thought this is a really interesting case because this is the first time Terry Collins said where he wanted to play David Wright. This wasn't a scheduled day of rest. He was in there. He was supposed to play, and David Wright just couldn't go. And despite all of that, David Wright tried to get himself in the lineup. He tried to stay in the lineup. And this is exactly what he said he wouldn't do. This is exactly what the Mets said they would guard against, what David Wright said he couldn't do for himself, for his career. He couldn't push it if he knows he's on the edge physically, because you don't want to push it through one game and wind up missing 3 months. And that's what's happened to him in the past. So part of me thinks David Wright hasn't entirely learned his lesson here, that he needs to acquiesce a little bit more. But then on the other hand, he did wind up ultimately giving in. He sat out. And how much of that was David throwing his hands up and saying, okay, you win? And how much of it was Terry Collins saying, look, this isn't going to happen, you're sitting? I don't know. I think it was probably a little bit down the middle in between. But I think it's just a reminder, and maybe at a really good time for David Wright, and maybe at a really good time for the Mets, just a reminder that this thing isn't over. This is a condition that David Wright is going to deal with for the rest of his career, for the rest of his life. So he needs to be careful. The Mets have done everything they can to be careful with him, but at the end of the day, David Wright needs to be careful and honest and say what's on his mind, say what he's feeling, be open about it. And as long as he's doing that, I think there's a pretty good chance he's shown he can play through this thing, he can be productive through this thing. But if he's not doing that, then you're looking at a situation where he can get in trouble and he can get the Mets in trouble. So I think it's just a reminder, and probably a pretty well-timed reminder, as we're getting into the middle of the season now. We're getting into a time when guys are starting to get tired for the first time, and guys have played a lot. and so on and so forth, that he's just going to have to continue to be honest and open and hope that it's enough so that he's still standing and he's still out there in September.
Yeah, and credit to Terry Collins for not letting him talk himself into the lineup and standing firm. So I mentioned Matt Reynolds. He gets promoted, the Mets' number 9 prospect, who almost made his big league debut in the World Series, which would have been pretty cool, but he never cracked the lineup. But he did crack the lineup on Tuesday night, and what a way to do it, right, against Max Scherzer. But he goes 0-for-3. You look at Matt Reynolds, and he wasn't hitting great at the AAA level, and I know he's also playing in Vegas, where it's more of a hitter's atmosphere out there than a pitcher's atmosphere. Is there a thought that eventually this guy's going to be a guy who can really hit at the major league level, or is that always going to be a struggle?
Well, that was initially the thought. 2 years ago, this guy was a really legitimate prospect, was really thought well of, and he came into camp last year in 2015 with a chance to surprise people, with a chance to make the opening day roster and actually challenge Wilmer Flores for the starting shortstop job. Well, it didn't happen, and he very narrowly missed making the team out of spring training last year, and then just went ahead and had a so-so season, which looked even worse than that in the context of, like you said, Las Vegas and the launching pad that we all know it can be. So things haven't necessarily gone great for Matt Reynolds over the past year and a half, with the notable exception, like you said, of making that playoff roster when Ruben Tejada got hurt. And by the way, he got an NL championship ring out of those 7 games he spent on the bench, so good for him for that. But this is a chance for him now. And like we just talked about with David Wright, even if David Wright's perfectly healthy, or as perfectly healthy as he can be for the rest of the year, the Mets need depth. They need infield depth. Wilmer Flores was supposed to be that guy and will probably be back before long, but Wilmer Flores was not getting the job done before he got hurt, which I think was probably part of the reason why the Mets were so quick to put him on the disabled list when he did get hurt. Terry Collins mentioned explicitly, during his rehab games down in the minors, Wilmer Flores needs to get right, and I think the Mets are going to take the time with him, despite the minor nature of his injury, to make sure he is right and his swing is right. And in the interim, Matt Reynolds is going to have a little bit of a chance to show what he can do at the big league level. And if he takes it and runs with it, I think he's going to get more and more rope, and he might have a chance to stay here. Eric Campbell hasn't done great throughout his time here, both last year and this year. So there are openings on the roster for Matt Reynolds to get a little bit of play if he proves that he deserves it. It's a small test, because he's going to have to do it quickly, but it's a chance. And as we've seen so many times throughout the game, both with the Mets and elsewhere, sometimes that's all you need. So a very important time for Matt Reynolds to take advantage of this and start to get his back rolling to where he was, I would say, a couple of years ago when he was very highly regarded in the Mets system.
All right, great stuff, Anthony. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Mets edition. For Anthony DeComo, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.